All right, I'll have just enough time to finish all this stuff before Monday's exam. Let's go on to slide 6. And the major point of this, remember we're talking about important properties of water, is that water, it serves or makes for an excellent solvent, a good general solvent, which means it's able to dissolve quite a few different kinds of things. So this brings up the definition, the three definitions that are involved here. A solution is a mixture in which something is dissolved in something else. The thing doing the dissolving is the solvent. The thing being dissolved is the solute. There can be more than one solute. And the overall mixture is called the solution. Well, water is not the only solvent, but it's a good solvent because of its polarity. Like I said, all of these properties spring from polarity of water. And we can see that for salts, as an example, in this slide. It shouldn't be surprising that salts, which are ionic compounds, dissolve well in water because ions are charged, right? And water is polar, partially charged, whereas ions are fully charged. Well, in very close-up view, we can see part of the edge of a piece of salt, sodium chloride, made up of a bunch of sodium ions and chloride ions, stuck together because of their charge opposites. But when water molecules come along, they can individually pick off ions and then surround them. This chloride ion is negatively charged. Notice it's being surrounded. It looks just like a circle, but it would really be a sphere all the way around the chloride ion, with the water molecules swiveled in such a way that they're partially positive hydrogens are up against the negative chloride ion, oppositely charged. And similarly, the sodium ion that gets picked off gets shrouded, but notice the swiveling of the water molecules in this case is so that the partially negative oxygen end is against the sodium. And therefore, we no longer really, once this is complete and all of them have been dissolved, you no longer really have sodium chloride. Instead, you have a solution that contains sodium ions and chloride ions no longer together. Well, the ionic compounds or salts are not the only things that dissolve well in water. We can see in 7 that even proteins can be dissolved in water. This purplish thing is a protein, and you can see that proteins, as we've discussed, are macromolecules. They are very much bigger than run-of-the-mill molecules like water. But a protein is made up of a bunch of amino acids, and depending on which ones it's made out of, the surface of a big protein will have partial positives and partial negatives all over the surface. And it doesn't matter whether it's partially positive or partially negative at any given place, the water molecule can swivel in the appropriate direction to have the opposite charge right next to it. So you have this big collection of water molecules forming a shroud or covering of the around the entire protein. The reason this solubility, or the fact that it makes a good solvent, is so important is because life, which we've already said several times, is really just the chemical reactions that occur in cells. It's metabolism, in other words. Well, those chemical reactions that make up life are not only chemical reactions. More specifically, they are chemical reactions occurring in aqueous solution. So life is aqueous solution chemistry. Aqueous simply means that water is the particular solvent in this case, which is why we look for extraterrestrial life by looking for evidence of water. All right, that brings us to 8. And here is a reversible reaction. That's why there's a double arrow here. It can go in either direction. But what we have as this reaction is called the auto-ionization of water. And you have that auto prefix, which means what?
Self,
yes. Auto-ionization means that water can ionize itself. So if you have a sample of pure water, meaning no other kinds of particles, just water molecules, at any given moment, the vast majority of those water molecules will just be ordinary water molecules, as we've talked about, meaning they will have no charge. They're neutral. Don't confuse this with polar. They are polar molecules, but they're still overall neutral because they still have the same number of protons overall and electrons overall. So they don't have a charge like an ion does. Water molecules are overall neutral even though they're polar. And most of them will be in that form, just like you see on the left here, ordinary water molecules. But at any given moment, a very small fraction of that population of water molecules will undergo autoionization and turn into two different ions. So what we're starting with our ordinary molecules. Of course, each one has an oxygen and two hydrogens, right? Think about a hydrogen just by itself. What is it made out of? What makes up a hydrogen atom? No, that's a water molecule. What makes up a hydrogen atom? Yes, a proton and an electron. And that's it, right? Okay, well, they're both here in a water molecule, the proton and the electrons being shared. But if this happens to that small population of water molecules, one water molecule will lose just the proton of the hydrogen, leaving the electron behind with this molecule, with the stuff that's left. All right? So it's just a proton by itself. Well, a proton by itself goes by any of three names. H plus is the symbol. That's one name. H plus is a hydrogen ion. That's another name. But think about what you started with. A hydrogen atom is just a proton and an electron. If a proton and an electron, a hydrogen atom, loses the electron, all that's left is a proton, right? So a hydrogen ion is a proton also. You can just equate all of those three in your mind. H plus, proton, hydrogen ion. They all mean exactly the same thing. So the water molecule loses just the proton, not the electron, and it goes on to the other water molecule. That gives rise to what's on the right side of the equation. The one that gains the proton from the other one, the hydrogen ion, is now itself an overall ion because now it has one more positive proton than it has electrons overall. It's a hydronium ion, H3O plus, the plus indicating that it's an ion. The one that lost that proton is also an ion, though, because now it has one fewer positive than negative. It's a hydroxide ion, OH negative. And these are superscripts, even though it's hard to tell there. Yeah?
So the two arrows pointing left and right are transferable?
Yeah, that means these could go back into the normal. They could go from right to left or from left to right. It's a reversible reaction.
Ionization as well?
This reaction. Now, importantly, notice that if all you have is water, no other types of particles, then you can't make one kind of ion without also simultaneously making the other kind of ion. So whatever the concentration of the one ion is, you have the same concentration as the other ion type in pure water. All right? Now, a hydronium ion is formed, but often a hydronium ion quickly loses the proton that it just gained, and the proton will be off on its own in solution. We call that a hydrogen ion rather than a hydronium ion. But, you could think of this as happening with just one water molecule. It can just lose a hydrogen ion, and what's left over is the hydroxide ion. But once again, you can't make the positive ion without also making the negative ion. All right? Now, that brings us then to the pH scale in slide 9. I'm sure you've all learned something about the pH scale, and likely you've learned three things at least, one of which is that the pH scale is centered at 7, the value 7. And there can be values above that numerically or below that numerically. You probably also learned that the pH scale gives you an indication of how acidic a solution is. And you also probably learned that the smaller numerically the value is, the more acidic the solution is. Have you learned these three things? Maybe not, but probably, whether you've remembered them or not. Maybe you've wondered, though, why the hell did they come up with a scale that is centered at 7? Seems like a weird number to be in the middle. And why did they set it up so that the lower the number is, the more acidic the solution is? Well, that was not just a choice. That's actually based on measurement. So we didn't just arbitrarily come up with this 7. That is an actual measurement based on pure water. All right? And that has to do with the fact that this pH scale is just one of many P scales. We use P scales in science when we deal with a bunch of numbers that we know all of which are going to be small. In other words, 0.000 something. In scientific notation, a bunch of numbers that are times 10 to a negative value, negative exponent, right, which are small numbers. Well, it becomes a pain in the ass to keep using those. Even in scientific notation, it does. So P scales were invented to make it easier to work with the numbers. pH is just one P scale. But P scales in general start with a lowercase p. pH is pH because the H stands for hydrogen, specifically hydrogen ions. The definition, though, of pH is that it is equal to the negative base 10 logarithm of the hydrogen ion concentration in a solution. In chemistry, we use square brackets to indicate concentration of whatever is in that bracket. In this case, H plus is in there. H plus, I told you, is hydrogen ions. So just the bracket with the H plus by itself means hydrogen ion concentration. The pH is the negative base 10 logarithm of that value of hydrogen ion concentration. All right? Now, most people have learned at one point in grade school logarithms or high school or whatever, but most people are not really adept at using them because you don't use them in a lot of everyday life. So you've probably forgotten or gotten out of the practice of using logarithms. Let me remind you what a logarithm is. And these are base 10 logarithms. There's infinitely many kinds of logarithms, depending on what you define the base as. But base 10 logarithms have 10 as the base. 10 is the special number. And the base 10 logarithm of some number, whatever number you want, is the exponent that you have to raise 10 to in order to equal that number. All right? It's easiest just to use examples. So 1,000, for instance, has a base 10 log of what? 3, because you have to raise 10 to the third power to equal 1,000. 10 cubed equals 1,000, right? If you take just 1/10 of that, which is 100, what is the log? 2. That's one order of magnitude jump, right? 100 is 10 times bigger than 10. But the log went down just one integer, right, from 3 to 2. If you take 1/10 of 10, you get to 1, right? Or no, we were at 100. 1/10 of 100, you go to 10, which has a log of 1, right? 10 to the 1 equals 10. And if you take 1/10 of that, you get to 1. What is the log of 1? 0, because 10 to the 0 power equals 1. Any non-zero number raised to the 0 power equals 1. Well, if you take 1/10 of that now, 1/10 of 1 is 1/10, right? What is the log of that? Negative 1, because another representation, by the way, of 1/10 is 10 to the negative 1 power, right? When you write it that way, it's easy to see what the log is. The log of 10 to the negative 1 is the exponent itself, negative 1. Okay, so that's how logarithms work. Back to this idea of 7 being at the center. We didn't choose that. That is an actual measurement. If you do have a pure water sample and you carefully measure the concentration of hydrogen ions in that pure water, and by the way, there's different units you can use for concentration, but in this case we're using molarity. or the unit is molar, which is moles of solute per liter of solution. If you do make the careful measurement for water, you find that the hydrogen ion concentration itself, which is just the H plus in brackets by itself, equals 1 times 10 to the negative 7th molar, or moles per liter. All right? Well, what is the log of 10 to the negative 7th? What do you have to raise 10 to equal 10 to the negative 7th? No. What do you have to raise 10 to equal 10 to the negative 7th? Negative 7. Just like the log of 10 to the negative 1 is negative 1, because you have to raise 10 to the negative first power to equal 10 to the negative 1. The thing you have to raise 10 to equal 10 to the negative 7th is negative 7. Right? It's just the exponent. Because this 10 is the base. Did you lose me there? The log of 10 to the negative 7th is negative 7. But pH is the negative of the log. So the pH for this concentration is the negative of negative 7, which is positive 7. That's why we set up P scales this way, so that we can turn these inconvenient little numbers with negative exponents into just positive versions of the exponent. All right, is that all clear? But that's why it's centered at 7, because pure water has a 10 to the negative 7th molar concentration of hydrogen ions. Okay, so it wasn't just a random choice. Now to the seeming weirdness of the fact that the lower the number gets numerically, the more acidic the solution is. Water is neutral, that's what 7 is. But a solution can be either acidic or alkaline if the number is other than 7. Numerically higher than 7 means that it's an alkaline or basic solution. Numerically smaller than 7 means that it's an acidic solution. And acids, by the way, are compounds. There's different ways to define acids, 3 major ways in chemistry, but the first way, the way that matters to this course, is that an acid is a hydrogen-containing compound that when you put it into water will split into 2 pieces. It will lose a proton, which is a hydrogen ion, and that will go into solution, and then whatever else is left in that acid compound will also go into solution. Okay? Just like the sodium and chloride go into solution, an acid turns into hydrogen ions and the rest of the stuff. So when you put an acid into a solution, you are increasing the hydrogen ion concentration beyond what it was just from due to autoionization of water itself. In other words, it's higher than 10 to the negative 7th molar if you put an acid in it. Does that all make sense? Okay, let's just say you put an acid into water and it increases it tenfold. It's 10 times the concentration that pure water has of hydrogen ions. Well, what is 10 times 10 to the negative 7th? 10 times bigger.
Negative 6.
Right, 10 to the negative 6th molar. Well, what is the log of 10 to the negative 6th? Negative 6, and therefore the pH, which is the negative log, is negative negative 6, which is 6. That's why when it gets numerically smaller than 7, it really means you're going up in hydrogen ion concentration. Because this negative exponent is getting smaller. That's making it a bigger number, right? Okay, that's why. And there's nothing magic about 0 and 14, by the way. That you can go above 14 or below 0. It's just unusual. Most things are within that wide range. That's what I just said. Yes, it can.
So that 10 to the negative 1, that pH level is 1?
The pH would be 1, yes. That would be a very strong acid. But notice it has a million times the concentration of water, of hydrogen ions that water does, right? Because it's 6 steps from negative 7. That's 6 orders of magnitude, 10 to the 6th times higher, a million times higher. And that's what I was just segueing into, that the pH scale is not a linear scale. A linear scale is one that has the same size steps. Each step is the same size, like a ruler, for instance. A logarithmic scale looks like the steps are the same size, but each step is actually either 10 times bigger or 1/10 as big as the one above it or below it. So it's an order of magnitude jump, just like we talked about for the metric system prefixes. That means that a pH of 6 has 10 times the concentration of hydrogen ions compared to water. pH of 5, 10 times more than 6, but 100 times more than 7, right? Two orders of magnitude, and so on. So this is an enormous range in hydrogen ion concentration. And slide 10 just shows you some familiar examples of things and their respective pHs. Some of them are alkaline, some of them are acidic. Gastric juice is up here, your stomach fluid, which is 2 or sometimes even smaller than 2, very, very acidic, which makes it the most inhospitable place in your body for things to live, to survive. You're continuously, every minute, taking in millions of bacteria, whether you're eating or just breathing, and you're always swallowing, and which is the perfect place to put those things that might hurt you into your stomach. Most species can't survive that pH, so it kills them. Well, overall, pH, now we're on slide 11, is important biologically because it is one of two particularly important variables. There's all kinds of variables that are part of homeostasis, and homeostasis is all about trying to keep these variables from varying so much that they get beyond lethal limits, right? Well, temperature and pH are two biggies because even a kind of a small change in either one of these can drastically affect the shape of proteins. I keep telling you that proteins are give you all your traits because proteins really do all of the important jobs in cells. It's a huge variety of jobs. That's why you need so many different kinds of proteins. But whatever individual job a protein has, it has that function because of its particular shape. And if the shape changes, it loses its function and the cell dies or the organism dies. Right? Well, you can see this in acid rain. This is an unhealthy forest you're looking at here because of acid precipitation, which is caused by various pollutants put into the air that then react with the water to form acids, like sulfur-containing compounds from factories, for instance, or from semis, whatever, turn into sulfuric acid, which then falls onto forests. That's a pH change that they cannot deal with because it's outside of their lethal limits. And that's bad news, by the way, because plants are examples of producers. Ecologically speaking, there are two kinds of organisms in the world, producers and consumers. More of a 182 thing you'll learn, but producers are producers because they are able to make their own food. Only producers can do that. All of the consumers, like us, absolutely rely on the producers because we can't make our own food. We have to either eat a producer or eat a consumer that eats a producer or eat a consumer that eats a consumer that eats a producer or so on. But it all goes down to producers. And when they start dying off, definitely we will too. So that little bit of bad news finishes that chapter.